morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone.
Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. Mike Cosentino is out of town and won't be on the show. Klaus von Stutterheim is on the other telephone line.
Klaus? Hello, everybody.
And we have with us a guest that I went back and looked through our website, and we've interviewed Tom O'Halloran five times in the past. And so this is the sixth time we've been talking to Tom, and we were interviewing with all the elections because he's Sedona's congressman. And for a good part of our listening audience, and Tom could tell you better about the size of his vast district, it covers most of our a good part of our listener area. And anyway, Tom, are you there?
I am here. Good morning.
Good morning to you. When I walk around the neighborhood, people come up and talk to me, and people talk to me when I'm in a ceramic studio and just other places, even the grocery store, and they know I'm in doing a show, and they ask me, you know, they're extremely worried about what's going on in Washington, and they're worried that the congressman like yourself understand their worries about the election. Do you have any take on that? Do you have anything you really would like to tell people?
Well, I think a lot of this has to do with, obviously, the postal issue, also the intrusion on a consistent basis by the Russian government, the Chinese government, and the Iranian government. We have to be careful about that. I think we're much better prepared for that part because our intelligence services have been working a lot on addressing how to identify the threats and how to potentially be able to counter them. But on the other side, the mail-in ballots, the concern about your vote being counted and stuff, you know, we have a tremendous Secretary of State who has been working very hard to address those issues on a continuing basis over the amount of the last year or so. We also have the ability to understand that the process moving forward has to be one of identifying that once we get our ballots, the mail-in ballots, don't wait. If you don't know who you're going to vote for, you're going to have to go through that process. But don't wait too long. My intent for my ballot, when I get it, I'm going to mark it off. And then I'm going to go directly to a site where I can drop it off and finish it up. And you can also vote in person starting October 9th, I think it is. So,
yeah, the vast majority of our voters in Sedona and the surrounding area vote by mail and have done so for, like, I don't know, a decade probably.
And a lot of these states that people are so concerned in have not had the type of voting that we have had over the last 15 years or so. So it's a big change for them to go to mail-in balloting. And it's a big change for their secretaries of state and for the entire postal service in those states. And quite frankly, our state has not been hit as hard on this postal crisis as the East Coast states. But having said that, this should never have occurred. We have now put the resources necessary. We've tried to overcome this by making sure that we have enough oversight into the Postal Service. We've had a number of hearings. Obviously, there's been lawsuits. And the bottom line there is we, as individuals, have to make sure that we get our votes in, and then we check in with the Secretary of State's office to make sure that they've received those votes.
A lot of folks still don't know that, Tom. A lot of folks still don't know that you can actually check in on the state website and find whether your ballots arrived.
Right.
And I think that's an important way to follow up. I know there's a lot of concern out there, but I think that at least in Arizona, as you say, with our with a great Secretary of State, I mean, I think we're pretty solid in terms of voting and certainly checking before, nobody's actually had much of a problem voting by mail. I think your advice to vote early is just common sense. Go ahead and vote. If you have questions, you can contact people with answers. So, for example, and if you're a Democratic voter in Sedona, if you have questions about the ballot and voting down ballot, that's one thing that we want to make sure Democrats do, because statistically in the past, Republicans vote further down ticket. Somebody actually asked me what down ticket meant. Well, the top of the ticket is a, is the presidential line in the state. It's the senator. It's the senator. Down tickets are all the rest of the candidates running. And Democrats have been not so good about voting down ticket. So if you have any questions on down ticket voting, check in with somebody who knows, and you'll probably have gotten a mailing from Democrats of the Red Rocks about their suggestions about who the candidates are and so forth and so on. One candidate we would really like you to vote for is Tom O'Halloran, who has, I think, done a great job in Congress. You had a primary challenger this year for the first time, and a very good candidate, and now you need to go on and, I guess, get on with the business of being a congressman, because so much of the time you guys are all tangled up every 2 years in running for office.
It's a process. Being a congressman is why I'm in Washington, D.C. today. I spent the weekend here because of the amount of work that has to be done this coming week. I was here all last week and the week before. And then going home those weekends. But we're right in the middle of trying to finish up a number of important bills, not the least of which is the next CARES package addressing the pandemic and trying to negotiate that. We've passed the bill out of here 115 days ago or so, and it's still not been taken up by the Senate. So, but we are in negotiations. We're hopeful that by Wednesday or Thursday we can have some type of a bill that comes out here to help the families of America and overcome. There's always some of the perceptions out there is, you know, well, we haven't put enough money forward for testing and tracing. And there's always been. There's never been a shortage of money for those elements and virus or vaccine research and therapeutic drug research. That money's been all out there all the time. We've never let that lapse at all. And that's a bipartisan effort. But the leadership has not been there in order to make sure those programs are working efficiently through the process by various factors within the administration, the Treasury Department, the task force, the White House. It's just been very difficult for even governors to understand the availability of the products that are necessary to protect our frontline people and also to protect our, obviously, the public and make sure the testing program is where it needs to be, which it is not. There's not enough tests being done out there. There's not enough tracing being done out there. And there definitely is not enough effort to address the critical nature of this enlarged and kept going. The idea that we're having at times over the summer up to more than 1,000 people dying a day, and we're still in this when most other countries, some countries are going into a second phase. We potentially can be going into the second phase. And I chaired a meeting the other day with Dr. Fauci. And I said, Dr. Fauci, back a few months ago, I asked you about the fall and the winter and what could happen. And you said that you were hopeful things would be in place. So where are you at now? And he was very honest. He says, I'm hopeful and I'm concerned about the fall and the winter. And I've been asking the task force. I've sent 6-7 letters to the task force and the administration asking, where are we at on planning? I have never received a response to one letter. and I'm not the only one, obviously. And I think most of Congress is highly concerned about this. And we will continue to try to make sure that we don't have more homeless people out there, and make sure we have food for everybody. And that's what this process we're going through right now is. We, as America, we're in a stabilization process here. We have to come out of this strong to compete in the world and have the jobs that our families can depend upon. And so this is an important stage in this whole recovery effort, and obviously to defeat the virus.
Yeah, it's such a complex issue, and it's new. You know, when they called it a novel, you know, virus, it is, and the whole issue is new. So the bottlenecks are really not about the virus research, but about supporting Americans while there's this, all this job loss and the schools and so forth. And so, am I right about that? Is that what you're getting at?
Oh, definitely. I mean, our children should be able to have tests when they need it, as fast as they need it. They shouldn't have to wait 3 days, 4 days, 5 days. Our teachers should be able to have the equipment necessary to protect themselves and their students. And as you've seen around the country, there have been increasingly amount of concerns as it deals with in-classroom education. I want to see it done as fast as possible, but only when we have the ability of making sure the students in a particular school district, because not of them, all of them are created equal as far as how they're doing their protocols. That's another issue, but we need to make sure our students, which means them and their families, because they're going back and forth to home, and then also obviously the teachers and their families and their children as they come home from the enclosed environments that are going to get more and more increasingly enclosed as the weather changes.
Well, Tom, what's happening generally with health insurance for people? Obamacare, the administration has spent 4 years attacking it. Now I saw an article that said that they're just going to change the name and to leave it, what left of it, intact. How is it supporting people in our district?
Well, first of all, whether you change the name or whatever, everything on an ongoing basis needs to be realistic as to the changing environment of healthcare in America, and we have to improve it on a continuing basis. Having said that, I mean, when I first got elected, I had a bill on trying to close the donut hole some more to save our seniors more money on prescription drugs. And what occurred was I went to the Rules Committee meeting, and the chair of the Rules Committee up there, we talked about my bill for about 3 seconds. They were not going to address it. And then they started talking about health care in general, and they used that opportunity to say that they had, and the chair of the committee had four bills in front of them. And he says, now we have these four bills, and these are bills can answer all of our issues on health care, we believe, and we're going to push them forward now. And I said, well, how long have you had those bills? And they said, since 2010. I said, well, why haven't you pushed them forward before now, and why weren't they introduced back then? Well, we're going to do it now. And that was over 3.5 years ago. And as of today, none of those bills have ever been introduced in the House of Representatives or in the U.S. Senate. No comprehensive health insurance bill has been addressed. And we've had the Affordable Care Act now for a number of years, and the key elements in the Affordable Care Act obviously are key elements that are being debated, especially pre-existing conditions right now. And pre-existing conditions, they talk about it like, well, it's something we'll look into, or we agree that there needs to be pre-existing conditions. Well, if you agree, then put it out there. One of the reasons they don't is there is a cost associated with pre-existing conditions. If you talk to an actuary or an underwriter, they'll tell you this is a costly process, a number of the elements. But it also is critical for everybody almost in America to have the ability to be insured, even if you have pre-existing conditions. If there's our children, our seniors, everybody of any age in between, all of us have or will have a pre-existing condition, which means if we don't have this, you will potentially have a hard time addressing your health care needs.
Klaus, do you have a question for Tom?
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. One, just sort of going back over your career as a congressman, can you highlight a couple of bills that you sponsored and that were passed that you're particularly proud of?
Well, I just found out last night, I got a call, email message that a bill of mine tomorrow will be go through the House as a suspension bill, and it's on. Luckily, for we have a lot of tribal nations in our district, and it's going to go to a data system for all the tribes throughout the country on their health care issues, so that we can finally track it and be able to address it in a meaningful way. The committee I serve on, Energy and Commerce, is the committee of jurisdiction on both Indian health care health services and on Medicaid. And so all major changes to health care in America ends up going through that committee, and either as the primary committee or a secondary committee. And they had a tremendous input on the Affordable Care Act when it went through. They had 27 hours of debate, continual debate, to get the bill out of committee back a number of years ago. But and we've had other bills. I've had bills that went through on as either a sponsor or a major co-sponsor on natural resource issues, whether it's uranium banning up at the Grand Canyon or the ability to overcome the uranium issues up on the Navajo Nation with 520-plus mines still not addressed and continually working on those issues. A number of health care issues and recently some issues as it relates to climate issues and energy issues. And, in fact, last week we passed a bill out on energy and climate issues, and it was a one bill, and it was the first change in the energy planning since 2007. It was a bill that it was my bill. I wasn't the only author of it, but they used my bill to bring it out. I had three other bills within that bill addressing climate change issues and energy issues. But most of it dealt with it was a number of bipartisan bills. It was over 40 bills that are incorporated all into one. I had three of them in there. But most of this involved the fact that we have to get moving on climate change, and that we need to do it, and that we are looking at energy and how we can more quickly get to a carbon neutral process and decrease the carbon emissions. We are trying to get as fast as possible to do research and development on potential energy changes, how to correct the inequities within the grid system so that our renewable energies can be part of the overall process. A bill that was of mine in there was to increase the amount of battery storage for renewable energies throughout the country. I've had a lot of input into broadband. Our committee is also the committee of jurisdiction for communications throughout America, whether it's internet or the broadband system in general, or telephone, you name it, cellular. We are the committee of jurisdiction on that.
And we're running, and Tom.
We were able to get $85 billion into a bill, the infrastructure bill that's right now in the Senate and waiting to be heard over there. So we've had a very good three years, eight months, or nine months now of ability to pass legislation that's meaningful for the American people.
The U.S. is running, isn't it, Tom, behind an awful lot of European and other developed countries in terms of the distribution of broadband. And having solid broadband is, affects business, right, as well as the consumers having watching movies on TV, on the Internet.
Well, you know, my underlying principle, go ahead, Klaus.
Well, you have to say, there's more to it than that, right? I mean, the U.S. is a huge country, and the European countries are very densely settled. So it's much more easy to, say, connect everybody in Germany than to connect everybody in the United States.
Still has to be done, Klaus, you know.
Yeah, no, no, I'm telling you this. Of course it has to be done. I agree, I want it. But I'm saying it's, you know, the bigger challenges than in densely populated countries.
We just got, there's three principles for the rest of the country. First of all, it's about healthcare, telemedicine, being able to get a hold of specialists as soon as we can, being able to save people to drive down to Phoenix just to see a doctor, that we could do it through telemedicine. And I have a bill out there that's still being worked on to bring residents, doctors out to rural America to do their residency and hopefully try to keep them in a rural setting. But we also are looking at other initiative programs. But broadband is a key instrument in being able to do that also. Then we have the education of our children. If anything put a spotlight on our children's education and the ability of rural America to be able to sustain that education for our children and our not only our children but our adult education and everything else, it's this pandemic, and it showed the really terrible issues involved in being able to have parity with the rest of the country. Our children in whatever area, they should have equal ability to be educated at the same level. And that just can't be done under the current system, especially without broadband. And thirdly, if rural America, rural areas, and semi-rural areas are going to be successful in economic development, we have to have broadband that's going to be universal throughout the country. I just got off a meeting. I can't talk to the particulars of it, but in the next 2 or 3 years, there's going to be significant changes in the ability to get broadband out to the rest of the American public. And the other side of that is that we have also worked with the FCC, Federal Communications Commission, and them starting to put more and more energy into broadband in rural America. And then, obviously, the bill that we passed in the infrastructure bill out of the House would have the $85 billion to help bring a private-public partnership together to expedite the process also. So there's a lot going on out there. And then the CARES Act, what we're debating right now is we're putting more and more hotspots in so we can address the needs of our children as they have to do remote education until the schools can open up completely.
COVID has changed how we do things. For example, normally Tom and Klaus would both be in the studio, and I could see them when they want to talk or if they could tell me if they had an issue and stuff. But right now they're both on the radio. Tom, you kind of really got out into this huge district. How has it affected your campaign? Does it feel different not being able to campaign personally, or what?
Well, I like being with people. I think you guys know that. I just love the warmth and the ability to have a better sense of how people feel from their heart. But you know, prior to the pandemic, I had more town halls than the rest of the entire delegation combined by a large number. And that has not stopped. I do a town hall every week on Tuesdays with Tom on a different issue. So we've been continuing to do that. On a normal day, I'll have anywhere from 7 to 10 Zoom meetings with city officials, county officials, of different groups from across the district that want to be able to sit down and talk with me, and meetings on different issues, whether it's on the campaign side or the official side. We usually go from about 8 in the morning out here about 8 in the morning with the official side, and then during the campaign season also, we go into the, Washington, D.C. time, probably about 9 o'clock at night. Actually, my Tuesdays with Tom, when I'm out here in Washington, I have to do those about, they start at 8:30 at night, East Coast time. So it hasn't stopped me from being able to be out there and learning about the issues and working with people and working with, our team has been working with all the hospitals in the district and all the governmental entities within the district on the pandemic ever since it started. And we're still doing that. And we have 15 pages on our website, on our official website, that are all of the agencies you need to contact, all the questions that you may have and where to go for those questions, identifying how the new bills are working and how they changed the system as far as the pandemic. We've continually worked on trying to get better testing, and obviously the Navajo and the White Mountain Apache and the San Carlos and Hopi and some of the other tribes and the Havasupai, their tribal lands are still closed down. We've been trying to work with them over time to make sure they get the assistance they need to be able to have their families to survive. So we haven't lost anything as far as getting the work of Congress done, other than the fact that I don't like the fact that we aren't back here more. I travel pretty much back and forth so that we can I can be near my staff and can communicate better with people and network. Then my staff is very restricted as far as how many people we allow in the office and the distancing and masks and everything. But then on the other side, we're trying to get out and campaigning as hard as we can, but I'm not going to have large meetings with people where we don't have the spatial ability to do that, nor there's a lot of these meetings that people don't wear masks, and I'm not going to put people at risk.
Mike texted in a question for you. He's in Tucson now. Mike texted in a question. He asked, do you have any sense of whether we're going to have another congressional district after this census in Arizona? Will that change, what your district look like and who you represent?
I think it'll change almost all the districts. We will have a new district, and that district is going to be centric again towards the metropolitan areas. I think Phoenix has had a lot more growth than Tucson has.
That's absolutely true.
Going to, again, be centralized out of the Phoenix area. It'll change all the districts, I think. But it's going to be dependent on where those numbers are. I know within and how big that number is. Is it going to be 750,000, 760,000 people, or is it going to be moved up to 850,000 people or so? I've had big growth areas in the southern part of my district, and so we'll see what happens down there. But everybody in metropolitan Phoenix has just undergone a huge growth spurt.
So next time you run, you might be running from a district configured differently than this one. Tom's district runs all the way down to the suburbs of Tucson, right?
Yeah, it's bigger than the state of Illinois by about 2,000 square miles.
And you're from Chicago, so you know how big Illinois is.
It's 54% of the state's landmass.
Klaus?
Yeah, I have two questions. When I was looking at your websites, two things caught my eye. You're a member of the Blue Dog Coalition and the New Democrat Coalition. Can you tell us what those are and what it means?
Well, they're both similar in one way. They bring people together. On the Blue Dog Coalition, that works for more. We direct our issues towards fiscal issues. We And the New Dems address their issues, and that's why I'm a member of it, towards a broader spectrum of issues in relationship to development of public policy on whether it's a human rights issue or an issue relating to schools or and other things. All of them obviously have a fiscal impact, but it also has a public policy of civil rights and things like that. And I've been on the on both of those committees since I first got to Congress, and we've been lately we've been obviously working on the CARES package, or what we call it is the HEROES Act, and you know, all these major issues that have come out of our leadership in Congress have been mostly all the major ones have been voted on by most of the caucus, and both of those groups have been relevant to getting them passed.
Tom, what about protecting public land? This is always an important issue in Sedona and all the surrounding communities here that you represent. Protecting public land is always something very important to people. Sedona is completely, as you know, living in Sedona, is completely surrounded by public land. That's a concern of people. What's happening on that in that area?
It's a national issue. I mean, in Montana, it's a huge issue also, and in other states.
Well, we just recently, in the last several months, passed out the Land and Water Conservation Fund funding again. That was bipartisan throughout Congress after years and years and years of trying to get that funding back and to be able to protect our federal lands, to protect our national parks, to be able to overcome and understand that as we continue to grow as a population, potentially, that we also want to be able to provide those resources that are relevant to the quality of life issues. Anybody that knows my time in government in Arizona knows that I've been consistently working on public lands issues and water issues, and each and every one of those, whether it's a management of our forest or making sure our communities are protected from forest fires, and instead of just fighting fires, to try to suppress them through appropriate management of our lands. But the bottom thing is, when you talk about climate change, that impacts each and every one of those elements, but those elements have a tremendous impact on how we address climate change also. We can't afford to lose 3, 4, 5 million acres of forest land every year in America. It helps us with CO2. It's a natural way of addressing these issues.
Is there a way of investing, Tom? Is there a way of investing more money in the actual techniques of fighting fires? I know that the fire suppression airplanes, or a lot of them, are aging. They're converted from other kinds of planes for other purposes. Would it be possible to get, you know, better fixed wing, better other kinds of aircraft, and I don't know, even using drones? Is there a better technical way to fight these fires if we put more money into it and more effort into it?
Well, we've done that already. I mean, we have a whole new fleet of firefighting planes coming on board. This takes a little bit of time. With that funding is all approved. We have the DC-10s now that have been equipped with firefighting abilities, and they are they have the ability to take the place of about 9 or 10 of our regular planes, because they can fly over an area for an extended amount of time. They have the ability to individually drop retardant or other types of chemicals, not chemicals, but retardant type of different versions of retardant throughout an area. They carry such a huge load, and they're critical to get – getting these fires somewhat under control. The best way, though, to address firefighting of our forests is to make sure we manage our forests appropriately. And I had requested a meeting in relationship. I serve on the Forest a subcommittee of the Agriculture Committee, and I had requested a meeting a few weeks ago, and we just had it last week, on just this issue. And why are we not working at a higher rate to manage our forests and our urban interface with the wildland urban interface to be able to protect our cities from devastation now that we've seen, to be able to protect the lives of our citizens, the quality of life of our citizens, and also to be able to maintain some of the most beautiful lands in the world, let alone America. And and our tourism industry for Sedona and the watersheds. And you can go on and on and on. We have to get this done. And three years ago, during the Farm Bill, which I helped construct and was a co-sponsor on, we put in the fact that we were putting more resources in, and we also identified that fire suppression has a separate budget, so it doesn't take away from the ongoing activities that are necessary for our local fire district, forestry districts, and our national forest to be able to address their issues on management of our forests. So those are two separate budgets now than they were before. And then we have different ways of helping with the thinning of our forest that would take a long time to go into. But a lot of that's been done, but it hasn't been done fast enough, and that's why we had the hearing last week after I had put forward that letter.
We get the idea, and I think that people, when they think about what a congressman does or what a city council person does, they think it's sort of big political issues. But a lot of it is technical, Tom. I mean, it's getting the right information to do exactly the right thing. It's detail work, right?
Oh, it has to be. I mean, these issues are so complex. If you don't have, I have a great team, I think, and they've proven that over time. But between my team and myself and the people we bring in, whether they're from an agency or whether we want information from the outside of the agency to see if there's a balance, a need for a balance, those are constant meetings. We either are in a committee meeting, and even when in committee meetings, we have meetings outside in the hallway with different people that are working on bills, different groups that want to meet with me that I can't meet with in the office. But we have a consistent flow of information from the early day part of the day in through the evening and on weekends. And if you don't have that, if you're not doing that, and you're not reaching out to your constituents, getting that information and understanding the complexity of their issues, then you're not doing your job. And you have to be able to communicate with a broad base of everybody on these major issues, and even in some cases on issues that others say, well, who cares about that? People care about that.
We're beginning to run out of Tom, we're beginning to run out of time. If you have any last points you think is particularly important to make to the audience that as a congressman that you feel that should be said?
Well, I think the most important thing is I think we as a people, including myself, we need to demand more out of Congress. I think Congress cannot just sit back and spend 111 days in Washington, D.C. on average a year and take all of August off, part of July, all of August off, and the first part of September off, and tell the American people that, we didn't have time to get the budget done, or we didn't have time to get this done or that done before the end of the fiscal year or before the end of the year, because that's not appropriate. When I just got done talking about the intensity of information flow that has to be done. You can't do that without being involved on a day-to-day basis. And Congress, over decades, has gotten away from the fact that it really has to. I've never had a job like this where you only meet in your primary place of business 111 days a year. I know we have to get out to our constituents. I do that all the time. But we will not get in front of the issues that face America if we're going at the pace we are. We have to anticipate the future and work on the future also at the same time we're trying to identify how to address crises and the impact of our citizens on an ongoing basis.
Well, we want to thank you for being with us, Tom. This is your sixth visit. This is your sixth visit on Democratic Perspective. Klaus, this is your sixth visit on Democratic Perspective. We want to thank you for being with us. I'm sure Klaus and everybody have more questions. And they can contact your office, right, Tom?
Definitely. Give me a call, Klaus, and we'll be glad to talk to you about it and get that question answered for you or anybody.
I think that people don't realize how available some congressional representatives are to citizens, just asking questions. If you have a question, and I think Tom talked well about the voting early. We did want to say that the voter registration deadline is October 5th. And October 7th, the early ballots will be coming out. So by October 9th, you should have your early ballot. As Tom said, send it in as quickly as you can. That's always a good thing. You can mail it in, or there are drop boxes in all the municipalities, courthouse areas, city halls and stuff, that you can drop them off if you want to do that way. Remember, there is a deadline before the election to get an early ballot in. And I know most people in Sedona vote the week they get the ballot. And we did want to talk a little bit about the propositions. Normally we go through all this rigmarole about the propositions. They all have phony names. They're all opposite of what they actually are. This year it's simple, folks. There are two propositions. Proposition 207 legalizes marijuana. There's a whole lot of restrictions on who can have marijuana. There's a 16% tax on marijuana sales that a lot of it's some of it's going to education anyway. Then Prop 208 is about investing in education. We urge you to vote yes on both of them. We just can't keep fighting this, trying to prohibit pot stuff generation after generation. And Proposition 28 will only tax the very top part of the very top earners in Arizona. It's a small tax that will do great things for education. We urge you to vote on Proposition 28 to vote yes. Klaus, did you have anything else you wanted to say?
Well, we're running out of time.
We're out of time.
What's the number I can call you to ask the question that Steve won't let me ask?
No, I won't let you ask, Klaus.
Call my main office in Washington, and they'll set you up with me.
Okay.
All right, we have a minute left. We want to thank Tom for being with us again and answering questions. And as I think you heard in the last part of this conversation, maybe kind of jumbled, is that Tom's really accessible. If you have questions, if you have need help, say, with veterans issues, contact Tom's office. I think that's the thing to do. He's elected by us. He's there to serve the people of Northern Arizona. Mike's usually here, and Mike usually wraps up the show. His timing is so great. But I wanted to say next week we have Mark Kelly. We'll be doing an interview with Mark Kelly and with Donna Michaels, who's running for county commissioner. I hope you all join us then. This program and all our other programs are available on podcast on pvid.org. Thank you for being with us, folks.
Been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.